Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Testosterone is frequently cast in the role of the villain in our society. It's blamed for why our jails are full and why some people don't do well in school. But is that right? What exactly is testosterone? The question of testosterone is one that is dominating women's track and field with the 800-meter victories of South African Caster Semenya.
But here she goes. Semenya is on her way once again in that rolling, buccaneering style. Brilliant. Are we on for a world record here? 153.28. It's just outside. What a time. 154.26. Another meeting record. She made it look effortless. Once again, Caster Semenya. It's all about Caster. And just to re-quote her, I just want to run naturally, she said. I am a woman, and I just happen to run quickly.
Caster has now been banned from competing in the Olympics because her natural testosterone levels are too high. Well, what does that mean? Who decides what's too high? Is that fair? And is that ruling just a reflection of how much we misunderstand testosterone? We invite you into our conversation as we talk about this hormone. The number is 210-614-8980. Is it just a molecule or is it something else? You can also email us with your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We're joined by Rebecca Jordan Young. She's the co-author of the book Testosterone, an Unauthorized Biography. And Rebecca, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So tell me about Caster.
Well, Caster Semenya is one of the runners who's been targeted by a rule that is based on a real oversimplification of testosterone and the idea that testosterone is just simply jet fuel for athletes, that it's different from any other factor that is a variable physiologically between elite athletes and other folks. And my co-author, Katrina Karkazis, and I have been working ever since these new testosterone rules were introduced to try to actually bring folks back to the science of the what's actually known in sports science about how testosterone works, how it is in relation to other things, and also to just think of it from an ethical perspective in terms of that we don't try to limit other kinds of natural variability among athletes. So why is testosterone something that gets singled out?
Now, Caster is a woman. She has not been enhanced in any way, or she's not in transition.
Right.
She is just a woman who happens to run really fast and who has high levels of testosterone. And they ruled that she is no longer going to be able to compete as a woman unless she does takes drugs to artificially lower her testosterone, which makes very little sense to me because it seems like here we have a person who has a natural occurring ability and they want her to take drugs to alter that. That seems like counter to usually what the Olympics is all about, right?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I think is a big misunderstanding that's connected to this, I agree with your assessment there. It seems exactly backwards. It's like enforcing a kind of doping. You have to take drugs to blunt something that people see as a massive ability. But one of the problems with this rule and this idea is the idea that testosterone is only somehow affecting in a kind of precision way certain things about how somebody would perform athletically. But testosterone is a multi-purpose steroid in our bodies. We have receptors for testosterone in tissues throughout our body. It affects all kinds of things like our daily diurnal rhythms, our digestion, our metabolism, our abilities to focus, etc. And it's not like there is an easy way to say, there's a volume channel and you turn up the testosterone and you get more of this or that function. You turn it down and you get less. It's part of a very, very complex and elaborate, delicate feedback system with all different kinds of steroids in the body and with different reception in different tissues. So the kinds of side effects that athletes feel when they have their natural levels of testosterone suppressed include things like massive fatigue, headaches, general muscle aches and pain. I mean, literally they force athletes to feel ill, and it just doesn't make any sense at all.
So it seems like you're on a mission with this book to help people have a better understanding of what testosterone is and recognize the misunderstanding that almost all of us are, you know, have as well. And you point to a episode of This American Life, and here's a clip.
Todd, like most of the men on the staff, had never been seen as especially manly during his life. But he thought maybe here in this group, compared to the rest of us, he might at least stand a chance.
Someone would be girlier than I. If I can't be the most manly in public radio, where the hell can I be the most manly? Like, I kind of wish this was SportsCenter, because then I'd be okay. Like, out of all my staff members or fellow staff members at SportsCenter, okay, I could be the one with the least testosterone. But in public radio...
We should get them to spit. Is it a real place, SportsCenter? Is it a thing?
Now, see, that's not fair. How can he have the most testosterone and not know what SportsCenter is? I know what SportsCenter is.
So in that episode, they were doing a show about testosterone. It's a 2003 episode. And part of it, Ira Glass told the staff, okay, we're all going to see who has the most testosterone, the men and the women. And they kind of made some guesses going in. And then they realized they were pretty much, they had a misunderstanding. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I want to say, first of all, give a good shout out to This American Life. I love This American Life. It's one of the reasons why I was so fascinated with the way that particular show unfolded. And that, you know, as we say in the book, the way that show is set up as if it's going to be a real mythbuster around testosterone, and it's going to really shake up what people think. And there are a couple of ways where it shakes things up. But in fact, it also plays on some of the mythology in a way that is super interesting. So it's helpful to notice what they do and what they assume is going to be surprising, or what they assume would that they and other people would expect. So the person who they're saying, oh my gosh, he doesn't even know what SportsCenter is. How could he possibly have the highest testosterone? That's a really great little clip to say, okay, we have this belief about testosterone that it's way more important and more encompassing than you would expect just a molecule to be, that somehow that knowing something about testosterone is going to predict whether or not you're familiar with certain kinds of media, whether or not, you know. So, I mean, obviously the idea there is that if you have more testosterone, you're just going to be more manly and masculine in every single way, including that, you know, you're going to watch and be familiar with sports-oriented media, for example. Another piece of cultural mythology that they don't exactly articulate, but that they play on in this episode, is the idea that being a gay man is going to also mean that this person is going to be the least masculine and the least manly. And so when the gay man ends up having the most testosterone, it blows everybody's mind, because somehow it's like testosterone is the volume gauge for masculinity for all of them. And then all these other things they imagine you can rank on there, like your sexuality, like what kind of media you watch, like actually how you dress, all kinds of things like that. So it's a really good episode to use to notice just how powerful and all-encompassing people in American culture tend to think testosterone is.
So we're talking about testosterone, but I wonder about estrogen. And we try to maybe cast them as like the yin and yang, but are they?
No, not at all. And that's what's so fascinating. So for one thing, people mostly do not realize and are surprised by the fact that in the process of what's called steroidogenesis, when steroids are produced and they go through constant conversion and production in the body, so there's this sort of chain of production. One thing can get transformed into the next and so on. Well, one of the products of testosterone, in other words, one of the things that it turns into in the body, is estrogen. And so many, many, many experiments over decades of early endocrinology made the mistake of assuming that if you gave an animal or a person testosterone and you saw some effect from that, then it was testosterone directly making that effect, whether that was an effect on a tissue growth or on some kind of function or a behavior. But it turns out when they discovered the principle that through the action of an enzyme, testosterone can be converted to estrogen, they also came up with a technique to block that conversion, and they started learning that many of these, you know, so-called masculine things that were happening from testosterone don't happen if you don't let the testosterone turn into estrogen. And what that means is it's the estrogen doing the supposedly manly things. So that's just one of the ways that we could interrupt this idea that, you know, it's like a testosterone is for boys and estrogen is for girls, and they're the yin-yang pair. They do opposite things. They cancel each other out. The reality could not be further from the truth. They're both, you know, have massive functions in both female and male bodies, and their functions don't just have to do with things that we think of as about sex or sexuality or gender. You know,
right.
it's all the way through the body, and you can't just split it down the line that, you know, this one does the girl things, that one does the boy things.
That's what makes this so fascinating and so complex, and why we need to shatter these binary myths about what testosterone is and what it does. And if you have a question or a comment, we welcome them. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm speaking with Rebecca Jordan Young. She's the co-author of the book Testosterone, An Unauthorized Biography. If you've got a question or a comment about testosterone, 210-614-8980. So, Rebecca, when you write in a book, you talk about T all the time. And every time I saw T, I was thinking Mr. T. And to me, it seemed like Mr. T is kind of like the perfect avatar for some of these misconceptions that we have about testosterone. And there's no doubt that's why he was called Mr. T, for testosterone. And I pity the fool
funny,
that would disrespect testosterone.
Right.
So is that about right?
Well, I think you are right. It's funny. I never thought about Mr. T, but as the avatar. But I think that's exactly on the money. This idea that, you know, every sort of outsized, manly, muscular, enraged, powerful, you know, good and bad versions of those things that works. I think that fits the popular mythology really well.
Let's go to James on the phone. The number is 210-614-8980. James, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I had a question about alternatives to testosterone therapy. If there's, you know, certain foods to eat or not eat, or certain things you can do to increase testosterone in your body without going the medical, taking the medicine that could have side effects and all that kind of stuff.
All right, James. And so is that something that you recommend that people pursue, Rebecca Jordan Young?
Well, first, I'll say I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to, you know, recommend particular treatments that people would or wouldn't do. But there are some really interesting things about James's question that I'd like to address. And one is it's useful to know that right now we're in a moment in time where every single ill that in particular a man might be feeling, there is a massive, massive campaign to make men think they might have low testosterone.
It's a big industry.
It's a huge market. It's a very big industry. It's very lucrative. And, you know, testosterone actually does have a lot of functions. So there's a way in which it's appealing, the idea that you can throw out all of these possible things. Oh, are you tired? Do you have less energy than usual? Are you building less muscle than when you were 20? Do you have less of a sex drive, et cetera, et cetera? Well, you know, the answer is hello, are you? Do you have a job? Are you not a teenager anymore?
Right, are you over 60?
Most of these things, yeah, most of these things are just typical aging and, you know, eating well and getting lots of sleep and rest and all that stuff is number one what's going to help more. But the other thing that is just so helpful to know is testosterone in everybody is naturally very dynamic. So when Katrina and I were doing research initially on this in relation to the sports rules, we went and visited some sports scientists who were working at very high-level sports centers, and they were trying to figure out if there were ways that they could get athletes' testosterone levels up naturally without doping them. Because, of course, if you're an athlete and you're being, you know, tested all the time, you can't take testosterone supplements. And now, so there were two parts to this. One was they wanted to see if they could get the T up naturally. And then number two, they wanted to see what was going to happen if they did get the T up. And I'll get to that second part. But what they found was they could very reliably get a natural boost in testosterone just by doing certain kinds of social interventions with the coach. So, for example, if they had a coach sit down with a professional athlete and go over a tape of a game and show, you know, that the coach would point out every single great play that the person had made, everything they did well, and praise them for 15 minutes. At the end of that time, reliably across the board, each, you know, these athletes had a boost in their testosterone. In fact, on average, it doubled. So that's really fascinating. They also, there's a lot of research out there that shows that regular weight-bearing exercise can boost your baseline of testosterone. It's going to be a different amount for different people, but the point I'm trying to make is testosterone is really dynamic. It's not just like, you know, whatever you're born with, you have. And it is true that what you eat, what you drink, smoking, all that kind of stuff also will affect your testosterone, amount of sleep.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I heard that your body has a natural level of testosterone that it wants to maintain. If you are taking artificial testosterone supplements, then your body will produce less testosterone in order to maintain that level. So you're not actually adding more to the cup. More is coming out along the way, right?
Yeah, I mean, people do. There are complicated ways that, you know, athletes take a variety of different things. I know that, you know, bodybuilders have sure. Processes they call stacking and so on to try to work with all this. But the short answer to your question is yes, you're right. It's not just a simple game of, you know, you're trying to hit a particular level, and so if you think your level is too low, you just top it off. It doesn't right. work that way. Your body is going to respond over time, adjusting receptor activity, adjusting how much testosterone it's making.
Your testicles could be shrink because of this whole thing, too. Let's go to David on the phones. Let me make another caller here. And David, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm in my early 50s. I was diagnosed with hypogonadism, low testosterone, at age 35. So I've been on various treatments just to kind of keep my head above the water. Just wondering about the long-term emotional and psychological effects of low testosterone and with that, even under treatment.
All right, David, thank you for the call. Rebecca Jordan-Young, I know you're not a doctor, but maybe your expertise can help us.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, again, this is getting to the edges of what I would want to talk about. I'll say that it's great that you're working with somebody, working with them carefully. I'm hoping you're doing full hormone panels pretty often. But one of the most important things that we've learned from clinicians is that clinicians in, you know, great centers are not basically treating people based on what their levels are. They're treating people based on their function. What are you feeling like? What is do you have symptoms of some sort? How is your mood? How is your energy? All that kind of stuff. And there's no, there's really no good reason to be treating somebody if the only indication of a problem is a low laboratory level of testosterone. If that is low in combination with actual symptoms, I mean, this is what we heard. Again, I'm not a clinician. This is what we heard from many, many clinicians. And over time, monitoring full hormone panels, monitoring that function, all of that is really important. I also just want to throw in here that, back to the idea that we can do a variety of things non-pharmaceutically that might change our own baseline levels. Changing our levels is one thing, but that actually does not predict very well how we're going to be feeling, how we're going to react, even things like how we're going to perform in the gym. It's complicated. Certainly, we know from people who take testosterone or take a variety of steroids on top of what they're already doing in combination with certain exercise regimens and so on, that has effects, but it doesn't affect everybody the same way. So I guess my biggest message here would be to listeners, don't try to manage this kind of stuff on your own. Find a competent physician, and preferably find somebody who is not advertising around is your testosterone too low, because that's a signal that you've got somebody who is involved in this sort of massive marketing. Go to your regular family physician, talk with them about it, and make sure that, you're talking with somebody who's not just going to respond to a laboratory test, but is going to respond to you as a whole person.
Ads remind me of those old Dr. Brinkley border radio ads telling people he's going to give them a goat gonad transplant. It's snake oil and not to be messed with. What is the behind the myths, though, about testosterone and how they say it's linked to aggression and dominance and violence, and how, real quickly, because we don't have a lot of time left, but there is some racism in part of that mix as well.
Yeah, there is. So one of the things that we found when we were trying to take apart this mythology around testosterone and aggression is that testosterone is like it's a ready narrative. It's a ready-made narrative you can throw in the word testosterone to some kind of a story you have, and suddenly it sounds like your story isn't just a story anymore. It's scientific. It's backed by biology and biochemistry. And we found that there were some studies out there that were making the claim that higher levels of testosterone among young black men could explain why there are disproportionate numbers of young black men in prison around the country. And that blew our minds. So we started digging and looking at how they put this information together. And, it's not what you would call solid, legitimate studies. They're studies that we characterize as pastiche, where they take a little bit of evidence from over here and then an anecdote from over there and then, a measure from one study but without measuring anything about behavior. In other words, it's a huge mess. But because of racism and because there is so much widespread public prejudice around the idea of black criminality,
right,
for example.
Well, I got to wrap you up. We're out of time, but people need to take away is that testosterone is complex. It's not a cure-all. It's not a simple thing. I want to thank our guest, Rebecca Jordan-Young. The book is Testosterone, an Unauthorized Biography. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.